Thank you very much for joining Citizens Climate University, a weekly webinar for the Citizens Climate Lobby that provides in-depth training and opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. My name is Jamie DeMarco. I'm hosting tonight's topic on CCL updates from around the world with Kathy. Kathy Orlando, prior to working at the Citizens Climate Lobby, Kathy served as Science Outreach Manager to the Dean of Science and Engineering at Laurentian University. She started CCL's first international chapter in September of 2010. And by November of 2011, she was directing CCL Canada as a full-time volunteer. Kathy now works as Citizens Climate Education's International Outreach Manager, where she draws upon 13 years of experience in science communication, organizational development, and volunteer empowerment. Kathy's letters and opinion pieces have been published in newspapers in every single Canadian province, and she has also written peer-reviewed scientific journals. She gave more than 100 climate reality presentations in the 18 months after receiving a training by Al Gore, and is a recipient of a Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal from 2012. And the Jardis Citizens Engagement Award 2017, and most recently, a Canada 150 sequentennial for her Member of Parliament.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, Jamie. Tonight, I hope what you get out of what I talk about is that you can identify exciting current developments happening across the world in citizen climate lobby groups outside of the USA, gain familiarity with maps, tools, and resources to share global carbon pricing updates and highlight, and I'm going to highlight some important international institutions we've been working with to build climate agreements and how CCL is engaging with them. And this is the agenda. I'll be going over the important maps and resources. I will tell the story of Canada's carbon fee and dividend policy. I will share just a small number of CCL stories from around the world and highlight three of Canada's, of Citizens Climate Lobby's international participation. Okay, when I started this job in September 2017, there were, I believe, 37 countries in our family. There are now 48. And starting in April, there'll be at least 50, probably 51, if things are go the way as planned. As well, since I started in September, we have activated, our team has activated 17 groups in 11 countries with climate action training. And that does not include Australia, Canada, Sweden, and the USA. That's one map. Here's a really important map I think everyone should know about. It's called the World Bank Carbon Pricing Dashboard, and it's constantly being updated. So every time a new country gets comes on board with a carbon price, it updates it. The goal is to have 20% of countries under a carbon price by 2020, and it looks like we're almost there. We're just 0.4% shy of that. There are 57 carbon pricing initiatives implemented or scheduled to be for implementation around the world. 46 countries, or more than a quarter of all countries, are covered by carbon pricing initiatives, as well as 28 subnational jurisdictions. So there are 29 carbon taxes. 28 emissions trading schemes are also known as cap and trade. There are 46 national jurisdictions and 28 subnational jurisdictions. So we're growing. The number amount of carbon under a price is growing. Another organization to familiarize yourself with is the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition. It began in 2015. It is a voluntary partnership of 33 national and subnational governments with over 162 business partners, as well as strategic partners. It was founded in the lead up to the Paris negotiations in 2015, And Citizens Climate Lobby is one of the founding strategic partners of the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition. And they meet regularly and strategize together to help keep moving forward on carbon pricing around the world and learning from each other. So you may notice Canada is one of the countries, so are many of our provinces. I can't remember the number of states involved, but you can see some of the other countries around the world that are involved. One of the things we are asking our volunteers to consider doing around the world is lobbying their governments to join the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition. So then they can keep learning from each other. So this is a really good organization map to keep looking at. And the last map I'd like to share with you is the Climate Action Tracker map. And it tracks 32 countries around the world, covering 80% of global emissions. And it calculates emissions gaps and global warming consequences. So they look at the nationally determined contributions that are submitted to the international bodies, and they determine how sufficient or critically insufficient the various countries around the world are with relative to what is needed to be done to what is being planned in those countries. The three worst countries in the world are the USA, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. I just would like to say Canada was in that category before 2015, and the USA was not. So the pendulum swings back and forth. So as long as the pendulum keeps swinging away from the critically insufficient, we should be moving forward. Anyways, this is a really good map and to be looking at, to keep track of what's going on around the world. There's only one country, I believe, that has contributions for reducing carbon emissions are in alignment with the 1.5C Paris Agreement, and that is Morocco. Oh, I would focus on Canada for the next 5 minutes. So from 2008 to 2015, we had a government that rarely spoke about climate change and did some things, but not nearly enough. And we were in Carbon Action Tracker's critically insufficient category during that time. And then in 2015, we had a change of government, and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and the Liberals formed the government. By a year later, they had developed what is called the Pan-Canadian Framework. Canada has 10 provinces and 3 territories. We are vastly different from coast to coast. There are many economic needs that are vary from coast to coast. And there is some competition in between the provinces and territories. And also some, you know, a little bit of sibling rivalry. Very hard to get provinces and territories under a national framework. And in October 2016, all provinces and territories, except for one, I believe, were under that framework. They worked for 2 years, and after 2 years, what was decided was a federal policy for carbon pricing. And I'll get into the details. But basically, if you're in a province or territory that either does not have a carbon pricing policy or chooses to opt into this policy, then your province or territory will either be in or not in this carbon pricing policy that I'm going to talk about in a couple minutes. So here's some really exciting things about Canada's carbon pricing policy. So if you're in a province or territory that has chosen to or has to be under the federal carbon pricing policy, called the backstop policy. So that's Ontario, New Brunswick, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan. In Canada, we start filling in our income tax, and people are already receiving their dividends even before the carbon pricing begins. So the dividends are starting to be returned with income tax returns, and then the carbon fees begin. You might be wondering, oh, why didn't Canada have a check? And that's because the size of the check for at $20 a ton for the first year is only about $300. So cutting a check 2-3 times a year, a bit complicated. What is exciting to see, and people are like thanking us regularly, is in their income tax form is a line called the Climate Action Incentive, and you get an automatic rebate. So that's our carbon pricing timeline. Very exciting, but let's back up and look at the story. From 2010 to 2018, these amazing volunteers went to Parliament Hill 13 times. Our volunteers recorded almost 700 lobbying sessions with parliamentarians, and we had almost 3,000 media hits. And keep in mind, we had no paid staff. This is 100% volunteer-driven work that's being done here, and volunteers putting in their own reports. That's us on Parliament Hill on October 13th to 16th. It's our 13th time on the Hill, and I like to joke around saying we were 13th time lucky. We were getting hints that Canada's carbon pricing policy was going to be pretty close to carbon fee and dividend. And you'll see a couple of the differences, but it's pretty darn close. And Senator Grant Mitchell, whom I've been lobbying since November 2011, when I was in our lobbying session with him, he said to us in front of all the volunteers, there were about six of us in the room, "You are one of the most successful lobbying groups I've worked with, because you're about to get what you lobbied for." Senator Grant Mitchell is the second most lobbied senator on the Hill, I believe. So, to be identified as one of the most successful lobbying groups he's ever worked with, it's quite the honor. And then I asked him if I could quote him, and he said, absolutely. So thank you, Senator Mitchell, if you ever hear this. So a week later, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau made the following statement about our carbon pricing policy. "Certain folks who might be more vulnerable to rising costs associating with polluting behaviors might not be able to bear it as easy as others, which is why in our approach on carbon pricing, all monies collected on that carbon price in a given province or territory will remain in that province or territory and go towards hopefully compensating those who are the most vulnerable and least able to find alternatives." So this is what the federal backstop policy looks like. It has two components. So one component is a charge on fuel consumption and heating fuels. So basically right at the gasoline, like fuel oil, natural gas, propane, they all have a specific charge. It starts at $20 a ton, goes up in 2019, goes up $10 a ton each year until 2022. And there are some exclusions, and I'll get into that in a moment. So if you're a small business or a consumer, you pay that cost. When we do our income tax in provinces that are under this carbon price, we get the money back, regardless of our income, regardless of our carbon footprint. And then there's a separate component. So some are emissions intensive, trade exposed industries like cement, like mining, like fossil fuel extraction. They are, if they're under this carbon pricing policy, they're under a different carbon pricing policy. It's not cap and trade, but it's something like it. So let me do my best to explain it. I believe there are 11 different categories of emissions intensive trade exposed industries. If your industry goes under one of those, if your business, your industry goes under one of those, then there's some sort of formula and it calculates how much money you're supposed to pay, and it's based on the best in your industry. So it sends a market signal. They still pay a carbon price. And one of the things it does is that it helps our industries pay the carbon price while not making them vulnerable to trade issues. Trading with countries that don't have an equivalent carbon price. So this is what Canada is doing instead of border carbon adjustments. So that is the Canada's carbon pricing policy. I'll answer questions at the end. I'm going to continue on with some CCL stories from around the world. So when I started, there are so many stories to tell. I don't even know where to begin. So Ireland right now is negotiating their carbon pricing policy, and they should have it by the end of the year. The Prime Minister and the leader of the Green Party and other parties are toying with a carbon fee and dividend. They have a multi-party system, and they call carbon fee and dividend the Canadian model. The Netherlands now is seriously looking at carbon pricing, and the Dutch Prime Minister spoke about carbon pricing in the Dutch Parliament a couple months ago, and again referred to the Canadian model of carbon pricing. I'd just like to talk about Belize. We've got a chapter up and running in Belize. Very excited. The young woman there named Ruth Gutierrez wants to get carbon pricing in her country. Europe, all the groups in Europe have joined together under to do an initiative to build political will for carbon fee and dividend at the level of the European Union. We're most recently bringing on board New Zealand, and so Ron, I believe, will be training them up in a couple weeks. It's so hard to keep track of everybody. Just incredible. I think they've already met with their government, they've built an excellent one-pager talking about how carbon fee and dividend might roll out in New Zealand. Mexico, oh my goodness, their leader there right now spoke at the Mexico's Fridays for Future rally about carbon fee and dividend to a humongous audience of youth. So Mexico is starting to get the carbon fee and dividend message. Guinea. Oh, I know, there's so many stories. Guinea is a French-speaking country, and our leader there, Omar Barassine, he has been developing a group there and has been training them up. We've trained up a group there, and interestingly, we've done it in French. So it's our first group that we've ever trained up in French. I cannot speak French very well, but I can read it, so we do it over WhatsApp chat. There's also Colombia. They continue to keep building political will to improve carbon pricing in Colombia. They are lobbying their government regularly. Kudos to Laura Morales in Colombia and her group. And Panama. Oh my goodness, they participated in the Fridays for Future rally in Panama on last Friday, and I'll be talking about Fridays for Future at the end of this. And then on Tuesday, they went off to go to a presidential open forum to ask the president of Panama a question about carbon fee and dividend in a leaders forum. So lots of exciting things going on around the world. And I apologize if I'm missing countries. Like, there are so many stories I wish I could share. I'd just like to take a moment to acknowledge that our leader, Jusa Kuzera in Zimbabwe, he empowered me to do something I didn't think would work. Some African countries have really terrible internet, so it is not possible to do the training over Skype or Zoom or even over a telephone call. So we do it over WhatsApp. Jusa empowered me to do it over WhatsApp chat, and he got 8 of his colleagues on a WhatsApp chat room, and we did the training over WhatsApp chat, and now it's a regular part of what we do at Citizens Climate Lobby International. Just want to take a moment to acknowledge that Jusa, his village was struck by Cyclone Idai, and I've been receiving reports. You can follow him on, you can follow the Manuka Youth Assembly or Maya on Twitter or on Facebook. And Jusa is a is an independent journalist. He takes pictures and he writes really well. And it's rather, it's heartbreaking to read his stories, but we must bear witness to what is happening. So this is, I don't know if you know about Cyclone Idai, but it's believed to have been the worst cyclone ever to hit in the Southern Hemisphere in terms of the amount of damage it's doing. Mozambique hit terribly, but so has been Zimbabwe and a couple other countries in East Africa. This is happening right now. So in the last year, we have, our volunteers have conducted national conferences in Australia, that's down in the corner, Nigeria, Sweden. Sweden, not so much a national conference, but a national gathering where they all converged on an event and got to know each other and did things together. Canada had a national conference. Germany and UK had their very first one on the weekend. I'm going to do a couple country spotlights, spurred on, I'm sure, by the Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. An equivalent caucus has been developed as a result of the actions of our CCL volunteers in Australia, and their nonpartisan Climate Solutions Caucus is called the Friends for Climate Action. As well, spurred on by the REMI study, professors at, I believe, the University of New South Wales did an equivalent REMI study for Australia, and very similar data was produced. And it's called, the study is called A Climate Dividend for Australians. Beautiful study, beautiful work. Way to go, Australia. Another country spotlight is Nigeria. In the past 2 months, I have activated 5 chapters in Nigeria, making them, I believe, the fourth or fifth most activated country in our CCL family, and a sixth one will be coming on board soon. And the picture on the right is me with Nigerians in a Nigerian at the Nigerian Pavilion during COP, and I'll discuss that story at the end. Now, Nigeria, just if you did not know this, has an economy the size of Russia, has over 200 million people, and it's an oil-producing country. Our leader there, David Michael Tarangwa, with the help of his amazing leaders in these various regions of Nigeria, are going to be pushing for carbon pricing with the new parliament that was just elected in February. And David Michael Tarangwa has already been in the media talking about carbon fee and dividend. So the push is on in Africa, I mean in Nigeria, for carbon pricing. The reason why I've shown this picture of me in the pavilion at COP24 in Katowice, Poland, is because I was there during a discussion about REDD+ and other climate actions in Nigeria with the World Bank and the former Environment Minister of Nigeria. And the whole time I was there, I was in that session in Nigeria, I was texting Mike questions, and I got up the courage to find the right question, not the courage, but find the right words to ask a question. And the question was something like this, to the Prime Minister and to the World Bank person, in front of an audience full of Nigerians. I said I was in a session the day before about carbon pricing, and the Costa Rican Environment Minister said something that just struck me, and I don't know if you know this, but Costa Rica has had a carbon price for 20 years, and the Environment Minister of Costa Rica said, you in the north sell carbon pricing all wrong. You need to sell carbon pricing like this. Carbon pricing should be sold as a way to account for the social cost of deforestation. So with that in mind, what are the prospects of carbon pricing in Nigeria, and what do you think about the Costa Rican's environment minister's thoughts about selling carbon pricing in Nigeria to the Nigerian people? I don't have time to go into all the details, but I'll just say the former environment minister indicated in front of the entire audience that Nigeria is looking at carbon pricing, and he said that there's one thing that Nigeria lacks that would really help them, and that is the civil society to help push for carbon pricing. And I feel, and I think Mike does, David Michael Tuwangwa feels, that this is the wedge. This is where Citizens Climate Lobby in Nigeria could fit in. They could become that civil society group that builds political will for carbon pricing. And I just have a couple more stories to tell, just three more. We engage in international work. One of the things we did was go to COP24 in Poland. I gave a talk in the media center with Climate Matters, and that's with Stuart Scott. And it was a really good experience to be in the media center at the United Nations. I obviously learned things from Nigeria and Costa Rica and did some networking. I met the woman from Belize. Also did, I ran into my environment minister as well as Elizabeth May and the environment minister for the province of British Columbia. And hilariously true story, I was not in, my daughter, as you're going to find out soon, has been striking with Greta Thunberg from Sweden with Fridays for Future. So my daughter and Greta in November kind of had a little bit of, in December kind of had a little bit of conversation going on Twitter. And so Greta knows my daughter, Sophia, and I was not in the pavilions for 10 minutes when I bumped into Greta. 28,000 people at COP24 in Katowice. I'm there 10 minutes and I bump into Greta Thunberg. I'm just very happy and honored to have met her. So great success at COP24. I think the big take-home message is we now have a rule book for the Paris Agreement, and that was the goal of COP24. And Fridays for Future, as I was talking about previously, humbly, my daughter was the first child, a first youth outside of Europe, we think, and that's what Wikipedia says, to go on strike with Greta. She did it on November 2nd, and she's been striking once a month. On Friday, March 15th, 75 Canadian cities striked, I think almost equivalent in Australia. I think there were over 1,200 strikes around the world, 120 countries, 1.7 million people joined the national march, the International Fridays for Future strike on March 15th. March is a difficult time to run strikes for schools in Canada because our big provinces of Ontario was out on holiday that day. So we are going to have our own national strike on May 3rd, and we have been building relationships, all of our volunteers. It's not just Citizens Climate Lobby. Like we've tapped into this Fridays for Future network, and many cities in the USA are joining the Canadians on May 3rd because the next big global strike is May 24th, which is a US holiday, or it's a week off, or summer starts, or it's the weekend before a long weekend. And my last update comes from the G7 and the G20. At the civil society meetings for the G20 in Buenos Aires in August, and now at the upcoming G7 meeting in France in 2019, our international division has succeeded in getting carbon pricing and border carbon adjustments into the final civil society communications that will be delivered to the leaders of these countries. So we're actually educating civil society, we're about carbon pricing through discussions online in chat groups and over teleconference calls. And then we, at least at the G20, we got to go to the meeting and educate there for a couple of days. Kudos to Pablo DeGostino and Tammy for joining me at the G20 in Buenos Aires. This really helped spark Latin American volunteers to really be empowered to speak about carbon pricing, especially now that Canada has a carbon price. And I just have to do a shout out to James Colas in Portugal and Christian Olas in the Netherlands. They worked really hard to get carbon pricing and border carbon adjustments into the G7 communique this year.
So. Thank you so much, Kathy.
And you can also ask questions on the CCL forums. And thank you very much for being on the call tonight, everyone. We hope that you found tonight's webinar engaging, useful, and empowering in your advocacy efforts.
Peace. Have fun out there. Thank you.